earlier today, I'm not sure if it's because she has 7 children and 5 grandchildren that suddenly she's hooked back onto children's literature, or if it really is that she grew up with Pippi Longstockings in Sweden and is a great fan of Astrid Lindgren. I think that was a mighty good start. So we will have questions at the end. The dean will now introduce our panel, or our speakers.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and as Anne did say, I do love children's books, and I'm not a person who keeps much. I toss and I toss, but it's amazing that I still have all my kids' books. I haven't been able to dispose of one of them, but I lost one, and this tells you how precious they are. And I think I lost it because it was just plain worn out, and I did not realize. And it's this book that my son, when he was just about a year old, and I had to read it over and over again. And now we try to find it, and you can't find it anymore. That was not a classic. It was something like Two's Company, or it was Three's Company. You just can't find it. But it was just the summer, and I kept saying to him, could we read another book? No. This was the one. Anyway. I think the topic today is really interesting, to kind of look behind the scenes of how do they select those Newbery and the Geisel Award winners? What is the process of selecting those books? Because each year there's so many good books that come out, and how do you make that tough decision to have one? I don't know. Luckily, when we have to admit students, we have a choice. We can bring in 225, not just one deserving student. So anyway, it'll be kind of fun to hear about what actually goes on. But let me now get on to task so you can hear the story. And let me introduce our two speakers. The first speaker, I think is first, is Robin Smith. She teaches second graders at the Ensworth School, and she's a graduate of Smith College, and she's a regular reviewer of children's literature for Kirkus, the Horn Book, Book Page, and the Tennessean. In addition to being an obsessive knitter, and I have to tell her, I'm an obsessive crocheter. So I have my Afghan at home that I work on every now and then. And every time you have a grandkid, I have to make a new one. And my kids are producing grandkids faster than I can finish them. But anyway, being an obsessive crochet and a baker, she's a woman to my own heart, I can tell you. Nothing better. Robin and her husband, Dean Schneider, have a son who's an undergraduate at Stanford and a daughter who's an artist in Brooklyn. And the second half is speaking of her husband, Dean Schneider. He's going to come up second. Dean has taught over 30 years in public schools, private schools, and community-based alternative school in Newark, New Jersey, a one-room schoolhouse in Rhode Island. I really like to hear about that. And a New England boarding school and an adult literacy program. Now that's a pretty impressive array of teaching responsibilities. He now teaches literature at the Ensworth Middle School, and he also writes for Kirkus Reviews and Book Links. He served on American Nominating Committee for the Hans Christian Andersen Award. I certainly know those books too. And Dean is the father of those same two children we spoke of earlier. Yeah, saved you there. Now, what brings Robin and Dean to Peabody today is their recent service on the Geisel Award Committee. That was Robin, and on the Newbery Award Committee, and that's Dean. It is that experience that we're so looking forward to hearing about. And I am sure that although I'm proud of all my books at home, I'm sure your household is probably overflowing with books. Yeah. And you probably can't part with one of them. No? And as you know, and as a mother in Minneapolis said recently, and those of you who know me, I love the quote, so I had to have one here. I'm glad there are so many thoughtful adults who are willing to spend thousands of hours reading and discussing books published in the last year in order to bring some real treasures to light. And with that, Robin and Dean, it is a treasure to have you here today. Thank you for coming.
Wow, it's great to see you all. I guess, can you hear me if I put the mic down? Okay, you can hear me okay? I can use my second grade teacher's voice. It's funny to hear that quote because I know who wrote that quote. That was our friend Betty Tissell who wrote the quote about people serving on the committees. And it really was a joy to serve on the committees. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how we're going to organize our time together. I'm going to talk for a little bit. And then Dean's going to talk, and then we'll take questions at the end. And I'm going to talk more, since the Geisel is a pretty new award, my talk is going to be mostly about how we chose the books that we chose, what were some of the criteria. And Dean's going to talk more about the nuts and bolts about how the committee structure works, because it's really the same for all of the committees that people that are on the American Library Association. So I'll talk more specifically about the Geisel, and Dean will talk about the Newberry more from the committee standpoint. So, and let's see, you can have the next slide. I don't have a little clicker here. One more. Okay, now we'll just let that up there for a little bit. I mean, we're not going to be reading that aloud. Thank goodness. I need it up there for a little bit. 4 years ago, I was sort of trolling through the ALA website to do a little bit of research, and I read a press release saying that they had this new award for a new book award called the Geisel Award, and it was named after the beloved Dr. Seuss, and it was for new readers. New readers, my people, little people. And all of a sudden, all the years that I had spent reading all this stuff for ALA and not being a librarian, I had never joined the American Library Association. But on that day, I decided it was time to join. And so I did. And the very same day, I pulled up the volunteer sheet online, which you can all do. And I volunteered to serve on a committee. And I specifically wanted to serve on the Geisel. And I spent a couple of months reading all the Geisel books that had won the first, that, you know, they were reading for the first committee, and then they were all announced. I saw if my winners were their winners, and I kind of had some crossover, so I was excited. And eventually, I got the phone call that asked me to join the committee for the third committee, and so that was really, really a joy for me. To be able to serve and look for the best books for new readers. Then I got the Geisel Manual shortly after I was asked to join. This is from the Geisel Manual. And I turned to the criteria pages, and I read the words that you see here on the screen in this kind of dull-looking PowerPoint. And I read them over and over. And these criteria on this page, and I'm going to move my body just a little bit. I'm just going to zip through it really fast. Because you have to keep these ideas in your head when I show you some slides of the books that did eventually win. They have to be intriguing to motivate the young child to read. They might have short chapters, they might not. The new words have to be added slowly in order to make learning a positive experience. The words are repeated in an easily recognizable pattern. Sentences are simple and straightforward. They have to be 24 to 96 pages long, and I will tell you why that became really important at the last, very last second on our committee. We had to count pages on one of our books. The illustrations demonstrate the story being told. The design has to, there's a lot of book design involved in the Geisel, so the design has to include attention to the size of typeface, font, uncluttered background, line length, that kind of stuff. Plot creates a page-turning dynamic. Book creates a successful reading experience from start to finish. Respectful of the interest of children. And go to the next slide, and there's just a few more. Excellent, engaging, and distinctive use of language and illustration. And not every book has to have all of those qualities. And then it's presented to honor distinguished books. The award is not presented for didactic intent or for popularity. So that's what we had to think about. And during our discussions, our committee's discussion time, we read aloud that list every single time that we sat down, because that was what we really had to keep in our brains, was what we were trying to choose was the most distinguished book for young readers. Not just a book that was cute, not just a book that we liked, but the most distinguished, and this is how distinguished was going to be defined. And we really talked a lot about them, and the problematic ones, another question that we had to really wrestle with was what makes a new reader? And of course, I teach second grade, so I have an idea of what a new reader is. But if you talk to a kindergarten teacher, she would have a really different idea of a new reader in her mind or in his mind. So we had to talk about the idea that we could find a book for a new reader who could be 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. That's a really huge span if you work with young children, and that really became a sticking point at times with particular books. And so we really wrestled with these ideas, and there were seven of us on the committee. There were three public librarians, one college professor who was an expert in reading instruction, and one private school librarian, a public a bunch of librarians, a college professor, and me. And I was just me. We all had something really unique to bring to the table. And what I brought to the table was the children. And I had spent many months hauling my Geisel books around the hallways of my school, and if children happen to visit our home, to making Dean sit down and read to children, listen to children read, and just sort of testing the books out and having an idea if a book that we thought, or I thought, was worthy of a nomination or the suggestion, did it work with children? So that was really what I brought to the table, and it was a big table, and there were a lot of smart people at that table. And when you're on a committee like that, your humility, you really have to be humbled by it, because a lot of people love children, love their books, and they feel just as passionately as you do. And you have to be able to have a little give and take there. And so so that was really amazing to be on the committee. And so when I was working with the kids, I was watching them read. I was didn't have to intervene, didn't have to teach them to read. I just had to watch them read. And I watched their little eyes dart along the pages and look at pictures and zip back to text and then be confused. And I thought a book was easy and would turn out to be very hard for certain children. And some of the books that we ended up choosing, one of the books, initially I really thought was too difficult for children to read. But then when I brought it to my readers, I realized, oh, they're not confused by the thing I thought would be confusing at all. So I had to be humbled also by my constituents, my little 4 to 8-year-olds. The Geisel is given to both author and artist. And so we have to. We didn't just look at words. And so for those of you who are interested in design and art, it was like a mini course on book design for young readers for me every day. I learned as much as I could about this. We had little articles by Dr. Seuss that he wrote about how to design a picture book, articles by Maurice Sendak from his Hole is to Dig, that whole series that he did with Ruth Krauss. We just looked and looked at George and Martha, all of our friends. And so what I want to do is look at a few of the books with you and have you look at some of the things that we looked at. If you go to the next slide, please. These are actually the winners. I'll just go through these. I'm sorry. This is the book that actually won, and I'm going to talk about this one last. Go on. And then this was one of the honor books, and another honor book. And we awarded four honor books. We felt like, you know, why not? So we did. There's a lot of reasons how you get honor books, and Dee's going to talk about that. But we really wanted to make sure people realize that we had a lot to choose from. And we wanted to let people know that we had plenty to bring to the public. So this little book here is called Hello Bumblebee Bat, and this is a book that looks the most like a traditional reader. It tells a story of a night in the life of the world's smallest mammal. And here we see a spread from an early page, and you can see that there's a question and answer format. And that repeats on each page. So we have this question and its answer. So we have this sort of personalized bat who's speaking to the child reader. And this repeated form, we thought, helped build the confidence with the repeated vocabulary. Always started with a question. So this one is like, what do you fear? This was about three spreads in. So we already had sort of, what did you eat? Where do you live? You know, the basic stuff. And I wanted to choose this one because this is where the book sort of went a little beyond the tradition, because it really talks about something important to children, which is our habitat and the earth that we live in. And it says, I'm afraid of humans and birds. Humans sometimes bird in the forest near my home, and birds try to eat me. And so lovely. And you can see there's burning there. And one of the big criteria is that the words have to match the illustrations. It doesn't have to be like that in a picture book, but it has to be that in a book that's for new readers. There can't be any confusion between what's on the illustrated page and what's on the written page. And there were a couple of books that we loved very much that we realized when we read with children, and most of you are familiar with the Brown Bear books. Well, that sounds like a book that new readers can read, and they really can read it the second time through. Because it says, brown bear, what do you see? And it says, I see a, whatever, flying fox, whatever. I'm on the newest one that came out, whatever that one. It was whatever the second page was, looking at me. Well, that little critter doesn't arrive until you turn the page, which makes it really hard to decode the word flying fox or whatever it is until you turn the page. So this one had that little matchup that we liked. This one also had, it was great because it was written by a scientist and it was illustrated by a scientific illustrator. And both of them work for the Museum of Natural History in New York. So we had some folks that had some real credentials as far as the science was involved. And that was important for us, too. We still have to judge it as a nonfiction book because it was nonfiction. So, and he's the world's foremost mammalogist, which was a word I didn't know until I was on the committee. And so, so anyway, this bat is not really Stella Luna. This is a real bat who lives in a dangerous place and has to find his way in the world. And we can go to the next page. It could be a she bat. I don't know. And then we get the close-up. So we had quite a few pages of this bat, really, and it's sometimes called a pig-nose bat, just in case you need to know. And the really cool thing was on one of the end pages, I think it was on the copyright page, it had a teeny little actual size bumblebee bat that was literally like hummingbird size. It was really amazing. And then I went, so that was one of our honor books. And then I want to go to the next honor book that's totally different. And I want to read a little bit from it while you're looking at this one page. It's Jazz Baby by Lisa Wheeler and Greg Christie, who's the illustrator. It says, brother's hands tap, sister's hands tap, itty-bitty baby's hands clap, 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 grandpa toot toots, granny sings scat, biddy bop and baby goes rat tap tap. Mama sings high, daddy sings low, snazzy jazzy baby says go man go. And when I first looked at this book, I thought this font was too confusing for young readers. I really did. And it was not a book that I thought that young children could really get through. I thought that they would, you can go to the next slide, I thought that they would enjoy the illustrations because I love the illustrations, and I understood that there was uncluttered background, but I was really kind of hung up on this whole thing with the font. And it's one of those things that can happen when you look at books really closely, is you can get hung up on something and forget that it's the whole thing. And then I brought it to my classroom, and it was turned out to be a book that children deeply loved, and some of my very weakest readers could read it right off the bat. So there you go. So that was it. There was rhythm, there was rhyme, and I got to watch the time here. And it reminded me of Chicka Chicka Boom Boom in its rhythm, and that was always a really big part of my children's life. And the words like toot and snap and clap are repeated over and over throughout the book, and it introduces ideas of jazz. It's very interesting how a very simple book for very young readers can do so many different things. And then the illustrations absolutely reflect it. If you go to the next one, oh, I guess it was my bag, you can see snapping, you can see clapping, and yeah, brother's hands tap, and you can see he's kind of tapping, and sister's hands snap, and that's not an easy thing to make alive on the page, but Christy does. And then we can go on, and then there you go, and then there's the sing high and low, and there's the dad. It sort of cut him off. Not so good with the scanner sometimes. Anyway, snazzy jazzy baby says go man go. And then at the very end, one more page, that's the back page, and it's an old LP. We had to explain that to our children in our class. As you can imagine. And then at the very end of the book, that I didn't actually make a scan of it, says it shows the snoozy woozy baby sleeps deep, deep, deep. Oh, yeah. And my kids, that's exactly how they read it. And one of them said, I sound like the Kool-Aid guy, you know. Oh, yeah. Now, talk about motivating children to read. The next book is First the Egg. Now, this book also was a Caldecott honor, so obviously a lot of people thought this book had something special, not just our committee, but also the Caldecott committee, and we were so excited on our committee when the Caldecott awarded it, too, because it was like, oh, we did a good job, they did a good job. This book, we got a couple copies of it. When you're done, feel free to pick up and leave the books, but you know, look at them. This is the outside cover, this is what the book looks like if you were to purchase it. If you're like me and you take off covers, go to the next, when you read them out loud, this is what the book looks like. So right off the bat, it's really intriguing, really child-friendly, really like a riddle book. And those of you who teach young children know that riddles They're not good at doing riddles, but they love riddles, and they're not good at figuring them out, but this is a riddle they can figure out. And it's, if you look on the copyright page, I think it says developmental biology is what the book is supposed to be about. So try to return to your like 5-year-old reading self, and then think about that little riddle thing. Now let's go to the next one, which is the first page. You know, here we got simple, clear font, uncluttered background, not a lot going on here. But then turn the page and take a look at the chick on the left. Her belly is the cutout. If you can go back to the first one. Okay, there. Go back a couple. There you go. Okay, see that? Mm-hmm. Now turn the page. There you go. Now you see her belly is now the cutout of the egg that's laying on top of that yellow paper that was there before. Okay, I guess I could turn here. You're not that far away. I never know how big a room is going to be. Okay, so we got this guy, and then we're going to turn it, and then we got that. And so what you have going on here, and you have the word then, and we don't have it, doesn't say then a chick, now a chicken, just then, that in-between stage. What happens between the beginning and when something is finished? So it is developmental biology, I guess. Let's go to the next guy. And then we have, and these are all just sort of topics that every elementary school classroom in America studies with kindergartners or first graders. So then we have first the caterpillar. And then you'll see, instead of it saying, you know, then the cocoon, it just says then the butterfly. And then there's actually online, I'm not that technically sound that I could figure out how to give a movie into my PowerPoint. That was way more than I could do. But there's actually a fabulous movie at Laura Vaccaro Seeger's website that sort of shows the pages falling on top of each other, and it's really great. So first the caterpillar, and then, of course, that caterpillar becomes a cocoon and then butterfly. And then go on. Now, this page was a bit of a problem for us. We talked about this page for about 2.5 hours, this page. And probably some of you understand what we were talking about on this particular page. What we were talking about is the word uncluttered background. Not so much. But luckily, not every single thing has to happen in every single book on every single page. And luckily, the children that we bring this book to don't have any problems with this background. But so we have the word first, the word. And so what's very interesting about this page for better readers is they love to find all the sight words that are hidden within that cluttered background. And then we'll turn the page. First the word, and then we have then. That's when they go, oh, there's other words back there. Then they can find them. Then the story, which is, of course, the story of the egg and the chicken and the tadpole and the frog and the seed. And then first the paint and then one more. And then this is the last spread. It's pretty clever. Pretty intriguing and pretty much a book I've seen kids read over and over and over. And this book probably demonstrates page turning dynamic the best of any of the books that I've shown you today. So that's another honor book. And I'll quickly go through the last one. Let's see. Oh, maybe it's, yeah. This is Vulture View. And this was a book that it's by April Pulisayer and Steve Jenkins. And Steve Jenkins does fabulous collage work, and this is just one of his many really wonderful books. And so the text says the sun is rising up, up. It heats the air, up, up. Pretty simple book. Okay, but it's about vultures, which is really actually very interesting to kids. And then we get to the work of the vultures. This is a bit of a problem for some people. Carrion is not really a topic that most librarians like to dwell on their everyday life. So, I thought the committee thought that the book really took a very interesting subject, treated it in a beautiful way, in great illustrations. All the words are very easily decoded, even words like reek, which is not a word that a 5-year-old knows. You know what it means because of it. There's I didn't do a scan of this, but this is a hard book to scan because it was kind of big. But so I think it's big enough you can see. It says, is it looking for that snake over there? No, no. That fox over there? No, no. The bear over there? No, no. Vultures smell the air. They sniff, search, seek. See, there's the word seek, and that's going to help you with that next word, for foods that reek. And then it goes on to describe foods, things that have bad smells, and then kids will get the idea, stinky deer meat, spicy smoke, you know, that kind of thing. So, it says, vultures like a mess. They land and dine, and rotten is fine. And this book had really nice endnotes, too, talking about vultures as sort of the cleanup crew for the desert, to keep the desert nice and neat. And then, but the words were simple, and that was important, and it was compelling for children. And then the last book, I know, talk about George and Martha, my goodness. This is the book that has the gold seal on it. Mo Willems is a man who is tuned into his inner kindergartner, if ever there was such a thing. He penned 4 Elephant and Piggy books with a 2007 copyright date. The committee chose There's a Bird on Your Head as the Geisel winner. Was it the large readable font, the enormous amount of white space that set off the speech bubbles, the humorous, compelling storyline that beckoned the turn of the page, the enthusiasm our child readers showed for the book, with no need of quotations, and the he said, she said, he said, maybe we liked the fact that children could figure out the story with ease. One look at the elephant's eyes told the new reader exactly how elephant felt at any time. Perhaps, you can go to the next slide, perhaps the fact that the words were carefully introduced and repeated. Maybe it was the timelessness of the story or of the two friends talking and trying to solve a very silly problem. Maybe it was the illustrations that led the child reader right to where his or her eye needed to be in order to read the words and the art. Or maybe it was the soul of this book that speaks to the child readers as we adults, and we adults who got to think about such things for a full year. That's one thing that we talked a lot about. We talked about all those listing of things that had to be, but I would just felt like the book has a soul, and we need to find a book that has a soul, that has everything, and that is appealing to our audience. And so one thing for sure is that reading these books and loving them all over again, I get to share them with you and children. It's been one of the most joyful learning experiences of my whole life. And no one can ever take away those memories and all the arguments and the voices, and we can't forget what the voices sounded like when we got to call the authors and call the artists on the phone and tell them that they had won this award and how they responded. I mean, nobody can ever take that memory away. And hopefully, you know, the realization, and also, actually, one of the things was a lot of the authors didn't even know what the award was because it was so new, and so we got to tell them that, and we had to leave some phone messages, and so Dean got to be with me at the airport when a couple of them called me on my cell phone, because I was the one, that was the cell phone number that got left, and as I'm getting on a plane, getting a phone call from the Hello Bumblebee Bat author saying, the company CEO has called me and wants me to call you. What's going on? Anyway, I hope that at some point these books will be just as famous and familiar to everyone as the Caldecotts and Newberries, but for now, they're just familiar to me and now to you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. And now we'll hear from Dean in just a minute. I do want to tell you all that Robin, 2 years ago, didn't even have a cell phone, so this was pretty incredible. And then also that I hear Mo Willem sent you a little thank you note with his original. It's probably at the frame shop now, so to his pal Robin. So thank you so much, Robin. Okay. Now, Dean Schneider will talk about the Newberry, and then we'll take questions and have answers.
Just one other anecdote was all this is top secret. As the committees are making their decisions, and which was problematic since we shared a hotel room at the convention. And I got a phone call. I knew Robin was at her committee making the final choices, and they couldn't come up with Gregory Christie's phone number, the illustrator for Jazz Baby, who happens to be a friend, and we had his number in my cell phone, so.
He visited our school.
So security was breached. Okay. I'll start with where we ended, just with showing you that was our medal winner without the medal on it yet. And the next, one of our honors. This was actually my favorite book of the year. I'm allowed to talk about my favorite, not the process of the actual committee decision. But and then Jacqueline Woodson's Feathers was my next favorite book of the year. So I felt pretty fortunate that two of the four, and then Wednesday Wars, completed the picture. But two of the four were books that all year long were my favorite books. And I love historical fiction, so all of the books are historical fiction, and which is fairly common with the Newbery Award. Oh, yeah. Well,
there you go.
Okay, so those will stay as I talk. Robin had a whole script she worked from. I'm working from an outline that I've written and rewritten about 20 times. But but with the Newbery and the Caldecott, it was a year of pretty innovative or even one review said or article said subversive decisions. With our choice of Good Master, Sweet Ladies, and the Caldecott's Hugo Cabret picture book that's 511 pages, five times longer than the Newbery winner. I'm gonna read you the whole manual, and it will be a slumber party. Now, I thought you might like to hear some of the actual wording of what's behind the Newbery. And the whole manual is online. If you just Google Newbery Manual, you can print out the whole manual. The process is in there. It's just that it's pretty dense, and a lot of this I learned along the way myself, especially when I get to the voting process. It was a lot of fun, but I didn't quite know how it worked while I was in that closed chamber. And The Newbery goes back to 1921 when they first decided to award the Newbery after book publisher Newbery, John Newbery. The first award was 1922, and the whole point of the award was in 1922 there were not many children's books as we think of them today. So it was really not just an award to honor a few books, but to really encourage more writing in the field. Which is why there's now a new Geisel, 3 years old. Coretta Scott King is now 40 years old, but it was originally to promote, not just to honor a couple books, but to promote more great writing by African-American writers. So to encourage good writing in the field of children's literature. And then the committee structure. Newbery Award Committee shall consist of the following 15 members, seven who are elected by no fewer than 14 members of the American Library Association, a chairperson elected annually from a slate of two, and seven members appointed by the vice president, president-elect, which is how Robin and I got on committees. We were appointed. Saved all the messy process of running for office and so forth. Again, just the essential terms and definitions of what the award really is, because we get lots of comments as somebody will say, well, my favorite book didn't win, and they make it sound like it's a flawed process or something, or wonder why this book and not this book. The medal shall be awarded annually to the author of the most distinguished contribution to American literature for children published in the United States during the preceding year. There are no limitations as to the character of the book considered, except that it be original work. Honor books may be named. These shall be books that are also truly distinguished. The award is restricted to authors who are citizens or residents of the United States. Well, that says a lot in a few words. And along the way, we did have several books that were eliminated from consideration because of ineligibility for copyright date, or previously published, or it was a folktale or fairy tale too close to the original, and therefore not the original itself. So those words became very important to our process. And then the final thing I'll quote from here is the criteria that were behind the award. Six criteria. One of the best things about our process was that Nina Lindsay, who's the head of our committee, who's a librarian in Oakland, California, gave us all these big yellow post-its, and at the top were the six criteria. So by the end, we all knew those by heart. the top is theme, and then it's a presentation of information, plot, character, setting, style. And very literary things that we look at. It's not a popularity contest. It's not for didactic purposes, not which one is the best in the classroom, and so forth. So it's all laid out here. So with those books up there as our finished product, I'm going to kind of take you through the journey we went on as a committee. And we started in Seattle. Our committee, 15 of us, 12 women, 3 men, 13 white, 2 black, librarians, teachers, executive editor of the Hornbook magazine, editor of School Library Journal, one person who had to step in because one of our members died during the year, and a woman who was on the Notables committee had to juggle. She was ended up being on both committees. She did Newbery, and then she would end our we met from 8 to 12:30. She'd run over and do 3 hours of notable discussions, and then she'd be back for our 8 to 10 meetings. And so that was unusual, but it wasn't the first time that had happened. In Seattle, we were told that we were not picking the best book of the year. We were picking one of the best books of the year. And you put together a different mix of 15 librarians, teachers, and so forth, you would end up with probably a slightly different mix of books. Although the four that we did pick were all books that were commonly in the Mock Newbery running. Feathers won some of the Mock Newberries, as did Elijah Buxton and Wednesday Wars. Good Masters was a little more of a surprise, but there were sites out there that said that's the book that should win, and so it's kind of funny that it did. One of the fun parts of the committee, and it was fun that Robin and I were on two different committees, and we both love picture books. We both love intermediate books. Robin could have been on the Newbery, but she chose, out of her love of beginning readers and second graders, to be on Geisel. But we had this influx of books to our house. Every day we'd come home from school, and there'd be 3 or 4 or 5 boxes of books sitting on our porch sent by the publisher. And part of the fun was coming home. We had to buy a box cutter, and now if the books are still there, big stacks all over the living room. I figure probably I read about 250 books of all those this year. An advantage of being a teacher is that during the summer I read a book a day. It slowed down considerably once school started. Teaching English and grading papers and reading books with kids, but probably about 250 books I actually read. There was a suggestion process starting way back last year in January in Seattle, where each month each of the 15 of us suggested books. We had a Google group, and we did it online, suggesting books, anywhere from 1 to 3 books each month, and that accumulated. It was anonymous, so we didn't know what everybody else was suggesting. And that led to about 140 books that we were, once it was suggested, we read it. We each had to read it. That became our common body of books that we were all familiar with, that we were deciding among. And then, starting in October, there was a nomination process. October and December, each time we nominated 3 books, and that was not confidential, so we knew what each of the others was nominating. And that had the potential of being a list of 90 books if we each somehow nominated completely different titles. Well, that wouldn't happen, so we ended up with approximately 40 books that were the ones that we read and reread and really read closely for those 6 criteria. And again, literary criteria. And it's a pretty fascinating process. A book you might have loved on the first reading may not stand up to second, third, or fourth reading. Or maybe it does for you, but didn't for somebody else once you get together and actually talk about the books. In June, in Washington, D.C., we got together again for some practice discussions. By that point, we had read 6 months' worth of suggested titles, and the head of the committee put together about 8 titles that we would practice our skills of critiquing and analyzing books. And plus the fun of going to hear last year's winners give their speeches. That's the process. They're announced in January, and then the winners give their speeches the following June. I discovered how many people you can meet in the men's room at a conference. Christopher Paul Curtis was in there. And chatted with him on the way out and reminded him he had come to my school. He didn't remember, but... and then, again, from D.C. to Philadelphia, another 6 months of suggesting books. And then, but this time it was the nominations in October and December. And that brings us to Philadelphia, where the actual process started taking place. We got there, and this was just a couple weeks ago, got there on a Thursday night, had a dinner as a committee, and then Friday morning it began, where we had a room in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, a big rectangular table overlooking City Hall. And we met Friday morning from 8 to 12:30, and then again Friday evening from 8 to 10. And there would have been more meetings, except we had the one committee member who couldn't be there because she was juggling time with the notables. So those were 6.5 hours there, and then we got up Saturday morning, came in at 8, met till 12:30, realized, and then Saturday night was going to be the big voting, so we thought, well, we better meet earlier. So it was 8 to 12:30 Saturday morning, 7:30 to 11. Saturday night, and here's how the balloting works. This is the part that I was not real clear with until we actually did it. By that point, we had discussed all 40 or so books thoroughly, over and over again, and when it came time to voting, it was just pieces of paper. First, we each could vote for 3 books. First place vote is 4 points. Your second choice is 3 points. Third choice is 2 points. Confidential, you know, private ballot. And you simply write down 1, 2, 3. And when they're tallied, for there to be a winner in a round of voting, there has to be at least 8 first place votes to be a winner. And it has to have a margin of 8 votes for total votes. So if you don't get that on the first ballot, you do it all over again. More discussion, another round of voting, and you just keep doing that. I don't know what the record is for the longest, but I can imagine it could probably take hours. We did not. We were done by 11 that evening. And once you have your winner, 8 first place minimum, 8 margin. Then you decide, as the criteria said, you may choose honors. And that was kind of new to me, too. I thought you just always did honors. But we had the choice. Do we want to have honors? And, of course, you do. So you want to honor as many books as you can. There are so many good ones out there. 5,000 books published every year. So we, of course, wanted some honors, and then the decision is, do you pick your honors from the winning ballot, the ones that also got votes, or do you simply do a whole nother vote? You've got your winner, let's do now a vote for honors. And we decided it made sense to use that winning ballot, and the few books that also got a fair number of votes became the ones we voted on for honor books. Same process, discuss the books, vote again. And that does not have to be the same, you know, voting numbers. It's just the way that it ended up working was that a few books ended up being our honor books, had a fair similarity in the numbers of votes, and one was way off the picture. And we had to decide, well, is the one that was kind of much further down in vote count, should it still be on there because it did get votes? And we decided, well, let's go with the three that had a similar number of votes. And those were our honor books, Elijah, Wednesday Wars, and Feathers. The next fun part was deciding where we had the sticky metal stickers, where to put them on the books. We got to decide that. There was a very funny review we read before this all happened, that for Elijah, predicting all the awards that Elijah Buxton might win, and it indeed did win, had the had the Coretta Scott King, it had the Scott Adele, it had the Newberry over his mouth. But that was kind of fun. Some books you kind of feel that they really printed the cover with the idea that this could win something.
And,
so Elijah, there is a character running away up here, but we covered him up. He got away. This was not so easy. Feathers was not so easy. Up here we could not aspire. And then the next, what I thought would be a fun step would be Sunday morning, back to the hotel, Ritz-Carlton, back to our room, writing press releases. I'm not somebody, I mean, I write a lot. I write book reviews and articles, but I like to write in my office by myself. To get together and to come up with these things that are going to appear in the press, very public, to try to compose as a group, it takes about 15 times longer than it would to write it by yourself. But you have to be polite, and sometimes the person on the laptop is not really maybe the person who should be on the laptop. But you've already been through 17 hours of meetings, and you hate to get in a fight over who gets to type the laptop thing. So it took 2 hours to write four little 50-word blurbs for the books. And then the really fun part, as Robin alluded to, was the next morning. We had to be at the press office at the conference by 6:20, and we made the phone calls. And so the first we called was Laura Amy Schlitz, the Newbery Medal winner. And all we ever got out of her on the phone was a bunch of sobs. Finally she said, "Thank you." So that was really, we were all kind of weeping. It's amazing how it's almost the same effect as when you call your parents after your first child is born. And so that was pretty neat. And then we called Chris Curtis. He was wide awake. He was expecting us, I think. "I've been up for 2 hours," he said. And I think he'd probably already gotten the Coretta Scott King by that point. A couple of these, Christopher Paul Curtis and Gary Schmidt, I think they had been so highly public in profile in terms of possible winners that I'm sure they were hoping to be the one. Gary Schmidt, we thought it was his wife. It turned out to be his daughter, who said, "Well, can you tell me what you're going to tell him?" And Nina said, "Well, no, we can't do that. Can you give us a number he can be reached?" So I think there we got his wife, and then we finally got him, and he was also very gracious. Jacqueline Woodson, I believe we woke up. I don't believe she was expecting this.
Well, she thought ALA was the next week, because it used to always be on Martin Luther King's birthday, so she was like, I thought it was next week.
Yeah. So she kind of sounded a little sleepy on the phone. I couldn't tell, disappointed or sleepy. Okay. And so that's the process, the press releases, the phone calls. Oh, and then the press conference was so much fun. We got to sit, I was front row center. I figured my bald head might make the news, but it didn't. So that was a lot of fun too, and the whoops and hollers and so forth at various awards. And then the final big fun part is Anaheim this coming June. Highly recommend anybody who can go out to Anaheim There's so many good events to go to. There's the speeches by the various winners. If you get a chance to go to the Coretta Scott King banquet, that was one of the best things last year. It was amazing. So all these, for us, it'll be no work involved. It's just go to dinners put on by the publishers and the authors. And my group is even acting out. I think with Laurie and me Schlitz there at dinner, put on by Candlewick on Friday night out there. We're going to act it out. I'm going to be Piers, the glassblower's apprentice. So.
Shall we take questions?
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So,
before we have some refreshments, let's take a few questions. And Allison, I saw you dying to ask one earlier. So.
I wanted Robert to show the hardcover. Did you show the hardcover of First EA?
I did. Yes, I did. I took. I slipped off the top. It's okay. No, it's a good. But your kid, Allison teaches very young children, and do they like that book?
I love it.
Good. You want to hear
I,
that?
One time, my kids are not readers, but there's a bird on your head. After I read it one time, they were acting it out, and they
loved it. Yeah, I had one little girl that came over. One of somebody we know, but she came over, and I sat with her, Mei Mei, and I didn't know if she knew how to read this book or not, but she read it and she knew all the two words on first drawing. She's in kindergarten.
Yep.
Yes. So for each of these, as you said, there are over 5,000 books published. So you read 250 of those, plus the ones that other people read. But, I mean, how did you pick what books you were going to read?
It's a good question. A lot of books come in. It's pretty easy to put aside Happy Hippo's Easter Surprise, and books like that.
But you can have our copy if you really need it.
A lot of books you just realize are too didactic or too, just don't stand out for, you put it aside, and if somebody suggests it, then you go back and read it. But you kind of prioritize, well, I'll come back to this if need be, but it doesn't look like a possibility there. I also am a reviewer, so I review 50 or 60 books a year, so I know books that way too. And we read reviews, we do a lot of research online, what have other reviewers said about such and such book. There are lots of books that don't win the awards, so that's a thing to keep in mind. There are lots of good books out there that simply didn't become the four that ended up winning. So it's not as if there are four good books and nothing else.
The editor at Candlewick is a woman called Elizabeth Bicknell, and I remember once somebody asking her, how does she pick, you know, manuscripts off the slush pile, or how does she decide? And she said, well, you have to read until you can say no. And so I think that I always kept that in mind. It's not so much for Geisel, but I was on the Boston Globe Horn Book Committee a number of years ago, and that's a lot of books, more than either of these two committees. And you just had to read until you could say no. I mean, you had to stumble upon something that made you know. It's not going to stand under the scrutiny of 15 people. For Dean's Committee, 15 people, all of whom are smart, intelligent people. The book's got to stand up, and boy, it's going to really stand up. And so that's why, you know.
Yes. Given the brouhaha over a certain word on the first page of last year, I was wondering if scrotum gate had any impact on your deliberations.
That's
great.
I could give a
question was, last year,
I'm not going to repeat the whole question, but the question was, after last year's recipient, The Higher Power of Lucky, got so much publicity for a word that made a lot of adults uncomfortable, did that impact this year's committee?
That's a great question. I thought it was unfortunate last year because I thought Higher Power of Lucky was a great book, and it got all this press just for the word scrotum in the book. And
a dog's scrotum, I might add.
Yes. But it's really not how the committee works in terms of, well, are there any words in here that are going to be objectionable? It's always, is it appropriate for the age? And the age for Newbery's up through and including 14. So we did have discussions of, is this appropriate for that range, you know, the older range of it, or is it really an older young adult book? But we never really had that discussion of, how is this book going to play with the audience?
Yeah,
will they find this objectionable? Are there enough boy books and girl books and young books and older books? It was always just what are the best books?
Yes. When you're reading all those books, how do you keep up with which one's which? Do you write a summary or do you take notes? Or?
Yeah, I have two big loose leaf notebooks, notes and notes on books. I would print off reviews, and those are all the notes stayed there. And then as some books started gaining momentum, you'd go back and maybe read the book again, take more notes, and then those notebooks came with me along with the reviews. But that's a real challenge. Even at 250 out of 5,000 out there, how do you keep 250 books straight? I didn't have to get new glasses or anything this year.
I know. It's a lot of reading. And I remember when Dean was reading books, sometimes he would ask me to read them just like he would ask student readers to read them. And he would say to me, you know, it's interesting how a book changes when you read it twice, three times, four times. I mean, some books you have to read that many times. You either have concerns about it or you like it so much that you want to really be able to defend it, or for some reason, and there were some books especially, I mean, obviously Geisel was a whole different deal, but for Newbery, there were books that you read, I would say, certainly three times, and lots of, you know, all of them at least twice of the, you know, the
reason you have 15 is lots of books. I didn't notice something and somebody else did. A couple of the books that I loved and nominated, I saw pretty early on we're not going anywhere because, yeah, I guess I agree with what you saw and I didn't. And the same, I would really be high on certain books and maybe saw things that somebody else didn't. So that's why you have a committee and not just one person out there deciding on what book he or she liked best.
I would have been fine if you had just been the committee. Can you tell us what the almost fourth honor book was? Can you
divulge
that?
As Robin knows, I'm very good at keeping
I would
secret.
Really like to know what that book is. It's really bugging me, too.
Can you tell us what your favorite book was? He didn't like it.
Yeah, you can say what you like.
Yeah, I think I'm just thinking which they were. I loved Rosemary Wells' book, Red Moon at Sharpsburg, a Civil War story about a girl named India Moody. That's a great book, I thought, but obviously it's not up there.
What about for the Geisel? Do you have any that you...
It's a little different for the Geisel, I would say. First of all, I was really lucky. The books that I really loved are sitting behind me. I mean, I really was quite successful as far as my own personal books that I loved. Only a few fell off. Obviously, I had nominated 9 because we have 3 different times, so not all of them were there, but... A couple that I really, really liked, I could definitely see why they weren't really, they were more like interesting books that I liked. Like I love the book Leaves by David Ezra Stein, I really liked that book. And I liked the Night book, I've got, you know, the one with the little child calling. At Night by Jonathan Bean, I loved that book, loved it, it was sort of the passion I matched. And then as I was really trying to talk about it as a new reader, I really had to sort of say, this is a book. It's a picture book that adults will need the adult presence. The adult will have to be involved in that book with that young reader. And I had to sort of see it go. And I hadn't really hoped that it would show up on Calvicon, but it didn't. But I think that a lot of these books got so much press anyway, so they'll have another life. But yeah, I did. I had some. But I was pretty, at the end we ended up with about, when we did our votes, there's all sorts of ways in the manual that you can move books off the table so you can kind of say, they're dead to me. You know, like they have to move off, and they've got to go away, and you have to stop thinking about them. And when we did our first vote, we had quite a few left, not quite as many as you all did, but I think we had, somewhere in the 20s maybe, and they were all, on this table. And I thought, you know, I could pretty much see any of these winning, you know, getting up, you know, having some support, and I would really be happy with them. There were a couple of books that I wouldn't have been happy with, and I was very, very happy that I was able to have other people see my point of view. I just wanted to make sure that when they were announced, I would really feel proud of them, and I would feel like I could support them forever. I don't have to defend the books, because I didn't choose them. The committee chose them. Dean doesn't have to defend the books. The committee chose them. But you still want to be really proud of what your group did together, and I do. I feel very proud of them.
Thank you.
two questions I get most often were, one is how many are on the committee? I think they assume that because I was on it, there must be hundreds. And the other is, how do you get to be on the committee? And that's of two ways. One is join ALA and get involved and get elected, get to fill out a volunteer form. Whichever way you end up on a committee, you've joined ALA, you filled out a volunteer form. So you can just get involved, whether it's with ALA or any place else. Rob and I, a dozen years ago, started going to a conference called Children's Literature New England. We got into book review writing and article writing, and we've been teachers, and our teachers' perspective, I think, helped on our committees. But it's all really in the name of children's books and connecting children with books. Katherine Patterson had one of my favorite quotes was right after she had won the Hans Christian Andersen Award, she came home and said, you know, a lot of people spend their lives doing things that are really not that important in the scheme of things, but connecting children with books is important and we get to do it. So that's kind of the spirit behind what we did.
The Mo Willems book is the same size and shape as Green Eggs and Ham, mm-hmm. and Henry and Mudge.
Right.
That's interesting.
That's right. And I think that's really a place where the Geisel Award is really going to evolve as to what it really needs to be. Some people feel very strongly that it should be a new reader that's published as a new reader, like by the publisher thinking it's a new reader. But it's very clear when you read the manual that any book could serve as a book for new readers. And the Geisel was started just like the Newbery was started for the purpose of encouraging a certain type of book. And so the certain type of book that we're trying to encourage are beautiful books with a soul that are for the new readers. And so if it happens to be that size, I was just reading with my children the other day a book called Bony Legs. Actually, Kate was reading it, my student teacher. And I was watching her read it, and I was thinking this would be such a great Geisel book. It's an old Dirk Zimmer book from probably the 60s. And then when I was thinking of when the dean was speaking, my sister learned to read with a book called Mr. Pine's Mixed Up Signs. And we also lost that book. And just about a few months ago, we were at Goodwill, and Julie was trolling. She's an artist that works with replay books. And we found Mr. Pine's Mixed Up Signs also would have been a really good, in that size. We just really looked at them all. And the hardest thing, really, when nobody asks this question, four books by Mo Willem were published in 2007. And my biggest fear was how in the world would we ever, I mean, I knew that they would be honored in some way. I felt strongly.
We laughed out loud over going to the costume party in the library. We were just guffawing.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, think about what could have happened in the voting was all the votes could have been split between those four, among those four books, and we wouldn't have had any of them honored. And that could have easily happened. And I'm going to be honest with you, I had no idea when we voted what was going to happen. I just had absolutely no idea, and it was very odd. When this one of the four rose to the occasion, you could have knocked me over, that we all, without saying it out loud, this was the one. And I'm not kidding you. I thought, oh, this could be bad. You have to decide how you're going to do honor books. And we decided before we took the first vote that no matter what happens, that we would go back again. Because we were trying to protect the Mo Willems books in case that happened. We wanted to be able on the honor books to at least do something. We were very, I think we all felt a big sense of anxiety about having four books by the same author that looked a lot alike, that seemed a lot alike to the reading public. Like, what would we do about that? So I thought we did a real good job.
Megan, do you have a question?
Yeah, I know that the Cabaret or the Cauldron would kind of a surprise. Did you read it for
the Newbery
as well? Was it?
Yes. But actually, even before I was on the Newbery, Robin and I were at a
Classic Book Club of the Watch.
Yeah, we had gone out to a brunch that included one of the editors at Hornbook and John Mason from Scholastic, and that really became the discussion of what are you going to do with a book like Hugo Cabret? It's half pictures, it's half words, the pictures really depend on the words, and the words depend on the pictures, but the Newbery is only for the words, and you don't consider the pictures at all unless they detract. But you don't otherwise take a look. I mean, you can't avoid looking at the pictures. But they obviously made a choice. I thought it was a really good choice. It's a book with 150, it's a picture book, it has 158 pictures. But you can also say, well, it does have, if you look on page 511, it has 26,159 words.
Oh. Dean did read the book.
But the words really don't stand by themselves without the pictures. So it's, I think it's a great book, a great choice for the Caldecott. I was going to bring it, but it would have weighed another 5 pounds.
We'll have one last question, and then we'll have refreshments, and certainly you can ask questions at that time. Kelly, go ahead.
Could
you talk a little bit about the
Aurora County All-Stars? About Deb Waugh's book.
It's a book I like a lot. It's
Aurora County All-Stars is the name.
Right, Deborah Weil. She's written a lot of great books. It is a book that was published elsewhere, in the Boston Globe, and that becomes an issue. How much has been published elsewhere and so forth. But a lot of that I can't really talk about in terms of, is that what made it not win and so forth. But that is an issue. I think I can talk about a book called The Entertainer of the Dybbuk. Great book. It's about Nazi Germany. And it was one of my favorite books. But it turns out, we read it probably in September, but it had a 2008 copyright printed right there in the book.
It's a mistake.
I don't know if it was a mistake or they really wanted to promote it in 2008, but that alone, it says right in the manual, it has to be a book with a copyright date of 2007.
That's a great book, by the way.
But the key here is that we can start reading for next year.
Right now.
Things right. Started ahead.
Yes,
thank you both so
thank
much.
Thank you so much for coming.
We have two little thank yous for Robin and Dean. And we have named, we will put book plates in the copies of our books whenever Good Masters, Sweet Ladies comes out from the need by Candlewick to reprint and reprint and reprint.
Next February.
They will be, we will put a note just in the books that they were in honor of the two of you. Also, I want everybody to thank Laura Beth Lehman, who's right over here.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Have a great day.